Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by one of my favorite interviews over the years because it means it's a cool movie music concert about to happen. Stephen Reinecke is going to be conducting the NSO here for some cool events. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, how are you doing, Jason? Good to talk to you again.
Oh, yeah, it's always a blast. Thanks for coming on. This week is it's going to be a special week here for fans of John Williams and, you know, Steven Spielberg movies and everything, because John Williams is being celebrated for his 90th birthday. I think he turned it back in like February, but this is the week that he's going to be coming to the Kennedy Center. It's going to be a big gala in his name later this week. But I want to talk about the two things you're doing. You're going to be doing a concert of E.T. the Extraterrestrial and Jurassic Park. So let's take them one at a time. Tell me how this is going to work for E.T. I mean, that's going to be one of your favorite scores to do, isn't it?
You know, honestly, it is, Jason. I really love E.T. We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of that release.
You're right, 82, yeah.
Yeah, can you believe it's been 40 years since that came out?
Wow.
Well, it's a fantastic movie, of course. It's just so touching and really heartfelt. And the music is spectacular. It really is one of my favorite John Williams scores. A lot of people think about all the bike chase, you know, and the big exciting music. But honestly, most of the music in E.T. is really sensitive and really tender music, depicting this bond between E.T. and Elliot. And it just, it always gets me. It just always tugs at my heartstrings.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, it touches your heartstrings when he touches Elliot's forehead. Right here. Yeah. Gets me. Oh, I cry every time. You mentioned it's 40 years, but man, I mean, For a movie with special effects and flying across the moon and a little alien sort of puppet thing, like, you'd think it would be dated, but it's not. It is so timeless. It might be the most, you know, maybe other than Wizard of Oz, man, it's right up there with the most immortal children's movies ever. I mean, why do you think it keeps, you know, echoing down the generations? It still works.
Well, it really does. It's held up to the test of time as well. You know, it's about finding connection. It's about finding yourself. It's about, you know, making a family. In a way, it's a little bit autobiographical of Spielberg's upbringing as a child in some ways.
His parents were divorced, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And he also had an imaginary friend. And that's kind of where the idea of E.T. came from. Is, you know, coping with trauma, coping with the divorce. I mean, we know that it's a family that's been divorced in E.T. and and this alien comes along and brings the family closer together, but gives Elliot this real sense of purpose to take care of something and somebody.
Yeah, I've heard Spielberg talk about it, and he said it was his own parents' divorce, and it was also the when they were I think he was shooting. He said he was shooting Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he was thinking back on the ending of Close Encounters when Richard Dreyfuss gets on the spaceship. He said, "Wait a minute, what if we do the reverse and an alien gets off and stays at Earth?" And then so he starts, you know, there E.T. is born. That and the divorce, and also looking at it, there's also I don't know if it was even intentional, it's like a bit of a Christ allegory too, Spielberg. You know what I mean? Like, they find him in a little barn, and then he flies, and he does these miracles, and he ascends to the heavens, and Spielberg joked, he goes, "I'm a nice Jewish boy making tales of resurrection. What am I doing?"
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a classic.
Exactly.
It's a classic.
Yep.
Well, what about, before we move to Jurassic Park, what about it musically? You know, you're conducting it, but, you know, tell me about sort of the musicality, the instrumentation that Williams uses. It's a masterpiece.
Well, it really is. One thing is that it really uses a lot of the tinkly instruments of the orchestra, if you will. It uses a lot of piano. Tinkly sounds. It uses a lot of piano. It uses a lot of the instrument called the celeste, which is kind of a bell-sounding thing. And there's a massive amount of harp in this score. There's so much great harp writing and great harp solos in this score. I don't know of another movie score quite like it that features the harp so incredibly prominently.
Yeah, I guess it gives it that sort of otherworldly, heavenly quality, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, so that the ET concert will be Wednesday, June 22nd, and of course, we got to mention it's, you know, it'll be screening on a giant HD screen too. So, you know, it's not just the music; it's you'll be playing it live with the NSO for the screen. That's awesome. So that's on the 20.
Exactly.
That's on Wednesday. And then after that, on Friday, June 24th, you're going to be doing a similar thing, but with Jurassic Park. Tell me about the musicality in this one. Like, why is what sort of instruments does John Williams use in this one?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of brass in Jurassic Park. There's, you know, all those great fanfares. There's the big main theme, bum 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 bum. That's
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. Welcome to Jurassic
yeah.
Park. Yeah.
That's all trumpets and horns and trombones. It's got just such a great sound to it. And then the second theme is a little bit more tender with strings and woodwinds. I love dinosaurs, great big dinosaurs, that theme.
In a movie,
Yeah, exactly.
and the piano too on that softer one,
Oh,
right?
yeah. There's some great piano parts as well.
I'm sure it's fun to play. Well, and just similar. So that's the music of it. But now I'll talk to the movie of it, just like you did with ET. I mean,
You
why do you
know,
think this still works? I mean, because I've sort of said that, well, I mean, I was a kid when it came out, so it was perfect. I loved it. It was blockbuster heaven. But talk
Yeah.
about the dinosaurs, they still hold up. It was sort of that transition from you know, I think they started the movie doing stop motion and then they transitioned to CGI, and that was like that big moment. But I mean, other than maybe King Kong, I think Jurassic Park is the next big moment on that, you know, movie history timeline of these monster movies. Like, I mean, talk about why it's so as a movie, it's a movie, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, when this first came out, anybody who saw it in back in the day when it opened, we can all remember just being in awe watching it, thinking we'd never seen anything quite like it. It was so realistic, so lifelike. And honestly, it does still hold up today. I think it was particularly better compared to some of the newer installments of Jurassic Park.
Right, one just came out.
I actually like, I know, yeah, and I don't want to get it too deep into the weeds on that one, but because I love the franchise, regardless of what they do to it.
Can't you never can top the original.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm getting at, is that it still really holds up. And I think part of it is that it's not all CGI. I mean, they created dinosaurs as well. You know, the Triceratops is that's
Yeah.
not a fake animal. They're actually interacting with this puppet, you know, the animatronics.
Some
And
robotic T-Rex and
yeah,
stuff. Yeah.
it feels real. It's frightening. I mean, those velociraptors, my God.
And there's more, and I mean the cast as well, you know, rest in peace, Richard Attenborough, but Goldblum, everybody. But there's like a heart to it and the themes. I mean, maybe a lot of that comes from the Michael Crichton novel, but like the themes of just, you know, the DNA and, you know, life finds a way, even if it's all female dinosaurs, they find a way to procreate. Like the themes
Course.
of that movie, I think give it a weight that is better that the sequels sort of lack when it's more of just, all right, let's watch these dinosaurs, you know,
Right.
gobble
Well,
cities.
right, because then they're just creating new stories just to try to make another movie. Michael Crichton really had it from the original novel. And the thing is, I mean, it's not so far-fetched. It's realistic. It's like, oh my God, something like this could actually potentially happen. You know,
Right, a mosquito in amber. That could be that's that could happen. Yeah.
yeah, it's you know, it's so smart, and that's part of the brilliance of Michael Crichton,
Absolutely.
and so I think that's one of its great successes. Things get a little far-fetched and quite literally jump the shark
The shark that
as the movie
Spielberg
goes.
built. Yeah.
I know, yeah.
Well, I'll throw you this little tidbit because I blew Jeff Goldblum's mind with this a couple weeks ago when we talked to him. So follow me on this one. There's a little cool, I don't even want to call it an Easter egg because I think that's almost reductive. I want to call it clever symbolic foreshadowing. You remember the scene when they, and I want you to think about this when you're conducting it. You remember the scene when they're first arriving and they're on the helicopter and the helicopter's lowering onto the island and Dr. Grant, Sam Neill, can't get the seatbelts to work. Remember that? And he ties them together. Yeah. So my brother pointed this out when we were watching this, and I was like, you're a genius, because I love this symbolic mise-en-scene cinephile stuff. My brother said, he goes, you realize when he ties those seatbelts, they're both female ends of the seatbelt, and life finds a way. It foreshadows that the female dinosaurs are going to find a way to make it work. Wow. I might be digging deep, but now you're going to think about that when you.
No, that's good. That's good. That's really good.
Spielberg, baby. All right. Well, so real quick, remind us how it's projected on the screen when they come to the Kennedy Center, how epic it is to be watching it while an orchestra is playing.
Well, honestly, it's unlike, you know, you've never seen the movie quite like this, because yes, there's a huge HD screen above the orchestra, and the movie is projected on that, and we provide the soundtrack live, synchronized in time, front to back, for the entire movie, which is just such a wild thing to do, because these were never meant. They were never created to be done this way,
right?
You know, where you just play them in real time, live to the film. So it's incredibly challenging. You know, normally these take days in a recording studio to sync up and get just right and record them. So it's a lot of fun. Doing John Williams scores are like my favorite things to actually conduct. And these are great. It's a challenge, takes a lot of concentration. But for the audience member, you really get to hear the score. It's buried in the movie a lot of times. You know, it gets pushed down in so many parts of the movie. And so now when we're playing it live, you really get to hear it in all of its glory.
Oh yeah. And to your point, if it's doing its job, it's sucking you into the movie and you're not even really thinking about it until the end. And then you're walking out humming it in your head.
Right, exactly.
It's great. Well, okay. So awesome. Well, so that's the two big screenings. It's going to be Wednesday, June 22nd, E.T. And then Jurassic Park will be on Friday, June 24th. Go ahead.
Jason, let me just tell you that before Jurassic Park, at 7 o'clock, the movie will start at 8. But at 7 o'clock, John Williams will be doing a question and answer session on stage. So people should come early and get to listen to John answer some questions.
That is awesome, and a perfect segue into what I was going to ask, because I know on Thursday, June 23rd, there's a sold out thing that John Williams is. They're doing a big 90th birthday gala at the Kennedy Center. It'll be with the NSO and I guess Yo-Yo Ma and a bunch of people. And of course the great Steven Spielberg will be at that event, but that's sold out. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So if they are bummed they didn't get a ticket to that, they can still see John Williams before Jurassic Park.
Yes, exactly. John's going to be around all week. And, you know, I've never met him, and he is one of my musical idols, so I'm kind of freaking out right now.
Are you? What are you going to do? You're going to shake his hand, and then you're never going to wash that hand. But do you have a question you're going to ask him, or are you just going to be like, I love you, sir?
No, I've got some questions for him, just some little things I, you know, would like to know. But I'm going to ask him if he'd sign something for me, and it's a John Williams was a fantastic jazz piano player, still is apparently, but his early upbringing, he was a real jazzer, and you can find this online and listen to him. You should really do this. There's an album, his first album when he was like 24, 25, he put out, it's called The John Towner Touch. His middle name is Towner. His name is John Towner Williams. And, you know, his dad was a jazz drummer and went by the name Johnny Williams. So he was trying to get some separation with the name there. So anyway, the John Towner Touch, you got to listen to it. It's unbelievable. There's a couple other ones that are great, too. But I went and I scoured the internet and I found a copy of this album in Japan, in Osaka, and I bought it from a collector. And I'm going to surprise John with it, because it's got his young face without the beard on front of the cover, and I think he's gonna say, when the hell did you get that? It's single sided for me.
It is I think it's public domain. I just found it on archive.org, and you can listen to the whole thing. It was released 1957. Seriously? Wow. 20 years before he did Star Wars. That's insane.
Oh yeah, he was so that would make him 24, 25. He was born in 32. But
Wow.
you got to listen to this. You should play a clip for some of your for your listeners. Play The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, or even like 30 seconds of it when you get a chance. It's unbelievable.
Wow, that is so cool. And it's I think you can hear. That's the one you're talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. And we can play that because it's public domain. There you go. I know you're short on time, so we really appreciate it. You've been really generous. I guess final seconds. This is John Williams week. Do you Stephen Reinecke think that he's the greatest to ever do it in terms of movie scores? I mean, there's Bernard Herrmann and Jerry Goldsmith and Max Steiner. There's so many greats. But man, John, no one's done it better and longer and more beloved in pop culture acclaim than John Williams.
I think that's true. I think John Williams really is the master of it. He's just been doing it for so long and just so many great iconic scores. I mean, I think he's done 109 movies or something like that. And pretty much each and every one has the melody. You hear it and you immediately think of the character or the movie. So he's so good at it.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait. We appreciate you joining us again, everyone. It's Stephen Reinecke going to be conducting the NSO for a concert screening of E.T. on Wednesday and Jurassic Park on Friday. Show up early at 7 and you'll get to hear from John Williams himself, the master. And then, of course, there's also that big 90th birthday gala with Williams and Spielberg on Thursday. That's sold out. But man, between those three things, it is a huge week at the Kennedy Center with fans of John Williams. So, hey, thanks so much for joining us. I love chatting with you every time.
Hey, you too, Jason. Thanks for having me.
All right. Be well. Have fun.
Will do. All right. Take care.